The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Friends, welcome. It is Bowerly on News Radio 930 WBEN. It was so fun last night working with Joe Beamer, and I remember when Joe Beamer was a call screener on one of the talk shows that I forget whether it was afternoons or mornings. Joe, we're talking about that last night, but how far he's come. And, of course, great being with David Bellavia last night and spending the final hour of David's show with David today. Once we get going, we just get going, and there's just no stopping us. And it's always fun to be back with DB. And we do, not DB Cooper, the other DB, but we have a great time. The phone number for you to call if you want to talk to somebody who's an expert on all things political, because he also lives, breathes, and eats politics, a Republican strategist who was with us in studio last night, Carl Calabrese. Carl, I know that you must be exhausted, and I thank you very much for your time. And be very honest, how much sleep did you get last night?
Not much. You know, you get wound up on these things when you're a recovering political junkie like me. So I was up pretty late. I was also up very early because I was on the wake-up show on Channel 4, and I had to be there at 6 o'clock. Oh. So, you know, when you're wound up to begin with and you know you have to get up real early, you tend not to sleep real well. So I caught a few hours of sleep, went to the show, did the show, came home, had breakfast, and promptly took a two, almost three-hour nap. So I'm pretty rested right now.
I don't know that anybody you're hearing on the air at News Radio 930 WBEN got as much as a minute of sleep last night. I'm just saying, we were pretty wound up as well. And kudos to everybody. I mean, Joe Beamer and Tanner Saunders and Tom Puckett and David Bellavia, Lisa Polizzi, Tim Wenger behind the scenes, and so many other people who took part in our coverage of election 2024. Let's start off with some mea culpas and what even the political experts got wrong. And I will go first. A mea culpa regarding J.D. Vance. When J.D. Vance was selected, I was not exactly thrilled with the pick. However, one of the things that became apparent to me, and I want your thoughts on this, J.D. Vance, he learns very quickly. He studies game films. He anticipates. And I felt like in the span of 3 to 4 weeks, J.D. Vance went from being a, to, you know what, this guy's starting to grow on me, to, wow, this guy is definitely, he's definitely major league material. What were your thoughts on J.D. Vance, and did they change at all during the campaign?
I'll be honest with you, Tom, I made mistakes in this campaign, too, in terms of, you know, judging polls, anticipating what was going to happen, but on this one, I did not. I knew a lot about J.D. Vance from his private life, his book, Hillbilly Elegy, the movie. I knew he was a very, very smart man, a very articulate man. I followed him for years when he appeared as a commentator on Fox. I followed his Senate career. And I thought he was as you say, just a real sharp guy. What he didn't know, he was going to learn quickly. The other thing I thought, I've got a very, very good friend who just does not like Donald Trump. In fact, he has probably stage one of Trump derangement syndrome. But his first reaction was bad choice. Trump screwed up again. This is a terrible choice. But by the end of the campaign, he was where you are now. He said, boy, I changed my mind. This guy really impressed me, how articulate he was and how he can explain things. I thought it was a really good choice from one standpoint, from many standpoints, but one in particular. I think I've mentioned on one of the shows is that Donald Trump had a big fall off in white, non-college educated, working class folks from 2016 to 2020. He went from winning that demographic by like 20 points in 2016 to only 4 points in 2020. If he was going to win, if he was going to make inroads into that so-called blue wall, he had to get back to that level of what he did in 2016. And I said, given J.D. Vance's background growing up in Appalachia, dealing with globalization, seeing his town hollowed out by globalization and offshoring, dealing with an addicted mother, watching drugs come into his community, the issues that he adopted in terms of economic policy, I said, this guy is going to really appeal to that demographic in the states of Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Michigan. I thought that from the very beginning. And if you look at his schedule, I mean, he literally camped out in those three states. So Trump knew that that was how he was going to use him. He assigned him that task. He did it. And I think that he contributed to those three wins in that blue wall and crumbling that blue wall. So he has certainly grown in stature. And already people are saying, Trump can't run again. In 2028, this guy's going to be a player, and he's certainly going to be a contender. Just a real solid choice. And again, and when you compare him to Tim Walz, Tim Walz, just because he hunts and sometimes has trouble loading a shotgun, as we saw in a video, that doesn't make him appealing to that working class, non-college educated group, because he doesn't win that demographic in his own state. He wins by virtue of the city vote, the urban vote, the more liberal vote. But in those rural areas, those outlying areas, he doesn't win that demographic. So why they thought he could win a demographic in Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Michigan that he can't win in Minnesota is beyond me. But that was a very poor choice. And by contrast, the Trump choice of Vance was a very solid choice.
What is the inside story of that particular vice presidential selection? Why was it made? Do you have any inside scoop?
Other than what I read, that there were, it turns out that everyone's saying she should have picked Josh Shapiro. And, and if she did, I think, number one, he would have been a much better choice, a much more solid choice. And she may have won Pennsylvania, but that probably wouldn't have made a difference anyways. But the feeling was, most pundits are saying, is that she was very, very concerned with making the Arab American vote in Minnesota and Michigan angry by picking someone of the Jewish faith in Josh Shapiro. That is what the conventional wisdom's number one reason is why she didn't pick him. The number two reason seems to be that she was concerned, and I don't know if this is true or not, but many people have written that she was concerned that Josh Shapiro might upstage her, and she didn't have to worry about that with Walz. Again, I don't know if that's true or not, but the Walz pick was not a good pick. Would Shapiro have made a difference? He may have in Pennsylvania. He may have delivered Pennsylvania, but that probably wouldn't have made a difference last night given the way the rest of the states fell. But, they say that a presidential nominee's first major decision is who he or she picks as their vice president, to quote one of the Raiders of the Lost Ark movies, she chose poorly.
We're talking with Carl Calabrese, political strategist, GOP, on News Radio 930 WBEN. If you have questions that you want to get in for Carl Calabrese, knock yourself out. You might be a Democrat, you might be a Republican. It doesn't matter to either one of us. 803-0930 is the phone number. Star 930 on the cell phone. 1-800-616-WBEN. WBEN Arthur Pressman, traffic attorney. News time is 3:18. Carl, I can tell you the minute I knew Donald Trump was going to win last night, and that is when David Bellavia came on the program at 8:50 and started running down states and the demographics of Trump voters and how they had changed. That is when I knew Trump was going to win. It was only a matter of time. But we talked about it a little bit last night, but I will tell you that the and again, we all go into these things with our political biases, and I voted for Donald Trump now, three times. And that rally at Madison Square Garden, it was star-studded. It was all time. There was an energy that I keep on saying the same thing, but you could feel the energy coming across on the TV. And I watched it with a number of, white suburban Jewish women. And they were saying things like, I love this man. I love Donald Trump. I love what he just said. And I just looked around the room in typical Tom fashion, said, wow, this is a really interesting crowd for a Nazi rally. Needless to say, people had been drinking and they had a good laugh at it. But when did you know? Like, when did you know and feel with your heart and your brain, you know what, Trump is going to pull this thing out?
Oh, well, that's a good question, because like most people, you have ups and downs during a campaign. There are days when you feel optimistic and days when you feel pessimistic. But I just kept getting back to, you know, the fundamentals of the race. You know, they say when you're investing in a company in the stock market, always look at the fundamentals, the management quality, the sales, the long-term strategic plan. I kept looking at the fundamentals and saying, how in the world when the number one issue is the economy and inflation, the number two issue is the border and immigration, the number three issue is crime, how in the world does a Democrat break through that? Because the disparity between the Republican positions on those issues and the Democrat positions on those issues was a huge gap. And I just kept saying, you know, how can people vote for personality over policy when the policy differences are so stark and the policy preferences are so stark in favor of Donald Trump and the Republican positions? Now, I've been around politics all my life, and I know that, you know, the polls are one thing, but on election day, it's about turnout, and that comes down to organization. And I was concerned about that because the Democrats have proven over many cycles now, going back to 2020, that they had a superior get-out-the-vote operation before election with early voting and mail-in voting and on election day itself. And Republicans have really fallen off. Now, we had a change in leadership at the Republican National Committee. The new leadership said they were committed to getting the vote out early, and they called it bank your vote. Lara Trump was in charge of it. And I said, you know, this is going to decide this race. I said it on the show with Susan and Brian one morning. If the Democrat machines in the big cities of those seven key states produce like they have in the past, she'll probably win. If, on the other hand, Republicans are back in the game with early vote and mail-in vote, and they also produce on election day with get out the vote, Donald Trump will win. Well, when we look at the numbers, and by the way, David did a superior job last night in really getting into the weeds of the vote and how it was turning out, and much better than anything I saw on any of the networks.
Oh, you better believe it. I mean,
no question.
David was made for politics. He is the best I've ever heard, and I've heard him all over the world. Little scene there from the Godfather 1. Let's go to Cheryl on WBEN. You are on with Carl Calabrese, and thank you for calling. Your comment, your question for Carl Calabrese.
Hi, this is Sherry, by the way. I'm calling you from Buffalo. And first of all, I just want to say that I was not at all surprised by the outcome of the election, not even by the landslide character and nature of it. I am a lifelong Democrat. I've been a Democrat since I was able to vote, and I'm going on approaching 60 years old. Mr. Calabrese, do you think that the Democrat Party here locally in Erie County and elsewhere across this country, do you think that they will learn anything from that resounding and landslide popular vote win, as well as electoral college. They haven't even finished even calling all of the states for Mr. Trump that he's going to win. But for me, who was not surprised by the outcome, and I had various reasons for predicting that Mr. Trump was going to win again, do you think the Democrats will stop taking for granted everything and every constituency that they have obviously taken for granted? Because I think that the Democrats, even though the polls should have clued them in, I think the Democrats were surprised by the cross-section of America that voted for Mr. Trump. Thank you, sir.
Sherry, first of all, I apologize for calling you Cheryl and not Sherry. May I be so bold as to ask, are you part of a group that the Democrats have traditionally taken for granted?
I am an African-American, and I live in the city of Buffalo. Need I say more?
And you believe, well, you know, it's interesting because for years, many Republicans have basically said, hey, you guys of our black brothers and sisters, what have the Democrats done for you lately? And they're not even doing anything to earn your vote. You're just blindly voting for Democrats. Would you at least give the Republicans a shot? What do you think or hope, Sherry, the Democrats learn from yesterday? And then we'll get to Carl.
I hope the Democrats learn that when you fail to take care of a significant percentage of your constituency that you rely on like clockwork to keep putting your candidates in office, there's going to be a day of reckoning, and this was one of them.
What an interesting point.
Great
Carl,
point.
We've talked about it before. And, you know, now it was judgment night last night for everybody like Sherry and like Republicans who have challenged various communities to not give up their vote so easily.
It's a great point, Tom and Sherry. I think there's going to be two great reckonings, self-reckonings going on in the next several months. The one will be with the media. The media has to come to grips with it has totally lost the faith and trust of the American people because it abandoned, starting in 2016 with Donald Trump, it abandoned objective journalism and switched to advocacy journalism to the point where they've essentially become the public relations stenographer for the Democrat Party and the progressive left. And consequently, they have really suffered with their credibility. They are going to have that reckoning and decide, are they going to stay with this advocacy journalism, or are they going to try to get back to more objective journalism? I don't know the answer to that. My gut tells me they'll probably try to move in the objective way, but these reporters and editors are so filled with disdain and outright hatred for Donald Trump. My gut tells me that when he starts to try to implement his agenda, they're going to revert right back to the evil Donald Trump, the fascist Donald Trump. I hope I'm wrong. The other great reckoning will be what Sherry talked about, within the Democrat Party. I had a discussion today with a very active Democrat, and I posed this question to her. I said, you know, you folks have created a monster. You've created a very large left wing, a very large progressive left wing, totally divorced from mainstream America, and they're driving your party. Is it a majority of your party? No, but it's 30 to 40% of your party, and it's where the energy of the party comes from and where a lot of the money comes from. If you're going to try to make them backbenchers now, if the adults in the room are going to try to take charge again, it's not going to happen without a fight. I mean, these people have enjoyed a lot of power for a number of years now. They're not going to go quietly into the night. And it could set up really a major internal battle within the Democrat Party. How that turns out, I don't know. But I do know that the progressive wing is very, very powerful, and they will fight to keep their power. We'll see. If the Democrats do not get control of this, if they do not get the adults in the room, back in charge and move to slightly left center as opposed to far left, they're going to have a lot more election nights like they had last night. But Sherry, I'd like to ask you a question if I can.
Sherry, if you could hold, I've got to take a break, Carl. Sherry, sure. Are you able to hold on, my dear?
Sure.
Oh, thank you. You're too kind to me. It's 3:27 at News Radio 930 WBEN. Carl Calabrese is with us, a Republican strategist. We will have Kamala Harris, the vice president, and her speech coming up during the 4 o'clock hour. You'll hear it in its entirety on News Radio 930 WBEN. And all of our election 2024 coverage is powered by Berardi Immigration Law. And really quickly, I want to just point out something that ties into, well, it's going to have to wait till after the break. 3:28 at News Radio 930 WBEN. Hang in there, Sherry. We'll be right back to you.
The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you news stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
And election 2024 coverage powered by Berardi Immigration Law from the Berardi Immigration Law Studios. It's Bowerly. Carl Calabrese, Republican strategist, is our guest. And Sherry is our phone caller, a woman of color who basically says to the Democrats, how come you are continuing to take the votes of people of color for granted? And Carl Calabrese had a question for Sherry.
Thank you, Tom. Yeah, Sherry, you're an African-American woman. The African-American women demographic is one of the most loyal members of the Democrat coalition. Democrats can rely on upwards of 95% of African-American women voting for them. You obviously have had some doubts. And I just wonder, I've asked this of other groups, you know, many groups of the Democrat coalition from going back to FDR have come to the realization that the party has left them. I'm thinking union members, blue collar workers, people like that have said, it's just not the party of my father and grandfather anymore. I'm leaving. I'm either going to become a Republican or an independent. And because of that, we now see that Republicans exceed Democrats in terms of party enrollment nationwide. I've asked this of other groups, my friends who are of the Jewish faith, another group that has been extremely loyal to the Democrats. At what point do you say, enough, I'm leaving the party, I'm either going to become a Republican or an independent? Have you reached that point, and have you talked to other African-American women who are at least thinking about that and saying that it's time for me to do something different?
I haven't spoken to anyone who has told me that they are absolutely thinking about changing parties, for instance, to a Republican, independent, you know, working families, so to speak. But I have talked to many people who have expressed regret and sorrow and are mourning that the Freedom Party, which was launched a few years back, didn't get to the finish line and that it faltered. I can tell you that for me, I am not a disgruntled kind of a woman. What I am is an observant individual. I have looked at the east side of the city of Buffalo all of these decades. Like I say, I am a Generation Xer. I am not a millennial. This is not my first time at the rodeo. I look at the east side of Buffalo. I look at the lack of a comprehensive approach to uplifting the existential circumstances of my community. And I know that Democrats have been in control of our destiny for a very long time. So when I look at also something as riveting and polarizing as the Kensington Expressway Project, almost the entire Democrat political, public elected office establishment is pro that project, when that project is against the best interest of the majority of East Side Buffalo residents. We want the restoration of our neighborhood. We want our neighborhood back, and we want a party that appreciates our vote and illustrates it by taking care of our concerns. I mean, the house is on fire, and it's time to not just show us a candidate with a bucket, but put some foam or some water in it and come on.
Sherry,
well said.
great call. And Sherry, it's time for me to pander. I was born a white boy in the suburbs, and I've noticed an increasing number of people identifying themselves as our black brothers and sisters calling into the show, and I cannot even begin to tell me what that support and listenership means to me. Because, you know, I'm older than you. I'm 61, as much as I hate to admit it. And it means so much to me, because I grew up in a different era. And I'm honored that you are listening to the show. And I'm honored for the multi-year support of so many of my black brothers and sisters who listen to this program. So thank you.
Thank you very much. And I am a fan. Take care. God bless. Happy New Year. In advance.
Thank you. A little. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. No, Carl, I mean, in politics and in radio, you know, we sometimes get pigeonholed, and it's always good to talk with people that, you know, I would expect by virtue of the circumstances that, okay, I'm probably going to connect with white people from the suburbs, but when I get black brothers and sisters from urban areas, it means something to me. And I feel like that's probably one of the best things that has ever happened to me professionally. And I never, ever take that for granted. Now, Carl, you talked about the media. And Keith Radford, who used to live right around the corner from me, Keith Radford had this to say on one of his social media posts. I'd like your comments on it. It is sad what has happened to network TV news. The look and demeanor of the anchors and reporters this morning is truly telling. Their personal opinions and political feelings are coming through loud and clear. No matter which side they support, some are beaming from ear to ear, and others look like they were just told they have 6 weeks to live. I never thought I would see it happen. Their facial expressions alone give them away in seconds. How things have changed, and not for the better. And that is from one of the greatest TV news anchors in Buffalo broadcast history, Keith Radford. I don't think you're going to disagree with that.
No, he's what I described as the objective journalist, always was. And he sees now the conversion to advocacy journalism, and he sees it as a corruption, as a perversion of the profession that he went into, and the ethics and the standards that he held himself to and others for his entire career. So if you're like him, you really have to be bothered by what has happened to the media in the last 10, 15 years. I mean, they've always been to the left, no question about that. But what we've seen since Donald Trump entered the scene, the political scene in 2016, is just off the charts. And there's an inverse relationship here, an inverse dynamic. The more the media is to the left, the more they are advocates, the more they make their feelings known, the more they fall in the eyes and the trust of the public. I mean, the letter that Jeff Bezos sent to the Washington Post, I mean, if you haven't read it, you should call it up and read it, because, I mean, he hits the nail right on the head that people aren't listening to us anymore. They don't believe us. They don't like us. We've lost our credibility. We've got to get back to the basics of journalism if we expect to be respected and listen to, and we've lost that. It was really a fascinating letter. So, like, you know, I say, this is going to be one of the two great self-reckonings that'll be going on in the next year, the other being the Democrat Party. How it turns out, none of us know, but it's certainly worth watching and commenting on as it develops.
Carl, I don't want to pick Nat poop out of Pepper, but is it advocacy journalism, or is it political advocacy journalism, because I think about people like Edward R. Murrow, and he did an amazing documentary back in the 1950s called Harvest of Shame. And I don't have time to get into it right now, but it was groundbreaking in its time. And one might say that was advocacy journalism, but it wasn't politically biased journalism, in my opinion.
You're right. You're absolutely right. I should add a word. I should have a prefix to that term. Instead of just saying advocacy journalism, I should be saying, and I will be saying, partisan advocacy journalism, because that's what it is. They're wearing it on their shirt sleeves.
Yeah, man, I wasn't trying to, you know, be, I wasn't trying to be that guy, but your premise got me to thinking. Let's talk for a moment about the blame game. Carl, it's happened with Republicans. It's happened with Democrats. Look, when you put up a candidate and that candidate is trounced, somebody, and I'm speaking metaphorically here, not in real terms, it's a metaphor, but somebody's head has to roll. And I would have to think that the Democrats in the presidential race, having been so soundly trounced last night, somebody is going to have to pay for that with a career or something. And upon whom do they pin the blame? Do they pin it on Joe and Jill Biden for not recognizing they needed to get out sooner and it basically took a palace coup to get him out of that office?
Well, it actually started even before election night. You could see signs of people starting in the Democrat Party starting to kind of point fingers. But, you know, this is human nature. It goes on not just in politics. It goes on in sports. I'm sure there's finger pointing now within the New York Yankee organization with what happened to them in the World Series. But there's going to be a lot of blame to go around here. Joe Biden, certainly, in deciding to run for a second term, huge mistake. The decision by the Obamas and Schumer and Hakeem Jeffries and Nancy Pelosi to not only to engage in a coup and to force him out, but then to anoint Kamala Harris and throw 14 million Democrat voters, primary voters, under the bus and say, your votes don't count. We are going with a woman who has never gotten one primary vote in the Democratic process, and that's going to be our nominee. That was a huge, huge mistake for them not to have some type of open convention or some type of primary, something to say, okay, we've come up with a new candidate, and this is the will of the Democrat voters. It was bossism at its worst, and it stuck in the craw of an awful lot of people, Republican, Democrat, and Independent alike. And then there's going to be there's the Democrat I talked to this morning, finger pointing on just why have we allowed the progressive left to take such control of our party. And why are we going on to this really wacky issues that the American people have no interest in and have total disdain for? As long as we lock ourselves into those positions, we are going to continue to lose elections. So, this is going to be a real Donnybrook, I think, within the Democrat Party. Let me say this, Tom. Remember when India Walton ran against Byron Brown?
Of course.
A few years back. She was a member of the Democratic Socialists of America. If you ever want to read, you know, people talk about Project 2025. Read the agenda of the Democratic Socialists of America. You want to be frightened and lose sleep, just read it. But I remember, she got 40% of the vote in the general election against Byron Brown. And I can remember talking to my friend, former political writer for the Buffalo News, Bob McCarthy. And I said, Bob, if somebody would have told you and I 8-10 months ago that a member of the Democratic Socialists of America would run in this city, the city of Buffalo, that we're always told is a kind of a more Midwestern conservative Democrat religious ethnic city, that a member of the Democratic Socialists of America could get 40% of the vote in this city, I think we both would have had the same answer, that you're crazy, it's not going to happen in Buffalo. But it did. And that tells you the strength of that left-wing movement within the party, that even in the city of Buffalo, a Democratic Socialist got 40% of the vote.
Actually, Bob McCarthy, one of the founding members of the Tom Bowerly fan club, a little known story. Carl Calabrese is with us. And Carl, you were talking about conversations you've had regarding the future of the Democrat Party.
Yeah, as I said, it's it's going to be a day of reckoning, a lot of finger pointing. I think it's, you know, Democrats fight pretty good. They, when they have a Donnybrook, they have a Donnybrook, and it's usually pretty public. So I think we're going to be talking about that as the months come by. We're talking about it a lot, and we'll see. We'll just see what happens. I mean, they're going to go in one of two directions. They're either going to right the ship and get more to a slightly left of center party and start to win elections again, or they're going to continue on the path they have been the last several years and go farther to the left. I'm not going to predict what's going to happen other than it's going to be a good fight.
I've got about 30 seconds. Does Donald Trump come out swinging, or does he come out conciliatory?
Well, he came out conciliatory last night. He's talking about healing America and restoring the American dream. It was a good speech. I wish he would have given that speech at the convention or a version of that speech as for his acceptance speech. Whatever he does, you know, he's a disruptor. And that's what people elected him for, and that's what his instincts are. And, you know, I was asked last night, what do you think he's going to do differently in this term? And I said, he's already telegraphed it, and his son Donald Jr. has telegraphed it. What they have said is they now realize just how partisan the civil service is. It's not a nonpartisan civil service. It's very partisan. It's filled with Democrats that he had to run up against in his first term that worked very, very hard to derail his agenda. He recognizes that. He recognizes the importance of appointing the right people who agree with him, agree with his agenda, and are going to really, really work hard within these departments to enact that agenda. So I think you're going to see some very bold moves from the administrative standpoint and the legislative agenda standpoint, especially if he has both the House and the Senate. And I think he's not going to waste any time. I mean, he's got one term. That's it. I think he's committed to making a difference, and I think he's going to go after it on two levels, one legislatively with the House and the Senate, and the other in the administrative and the executive branch of government to try to, if not reform the bureaucracy, because that's a big order to do in 4 years, but at least to work around it and to tame it somewhat so that the will of the people, as demonstrated in this election last night, has a chance of getting implemented and not stopped and stymied by unelected bureaucrats.
Carl, well said, and I can't wait to talk to you in the future, and I can't wait to listen to you in the future on WBEN and regular contributor to the David Bellavia program. And we, both of us, Carl, we genuflect in the greatness of David Bellavia as a political analyst. He's really, really awesome.
Really. I'm telling you, I meant what I said. I did not see anything like the level of detail that he gave last night on this show, on WBN, in terms of talking about what vote was coming out and in what numbers. I didn't see anything like that on any of the major networks.
No, he is absolutely amazing. Thank you very much, Carl Calabrese.
Thank you.
I appreciate it.
Enjoy, Tom.
And, of course, if you missed any of David Bellavia's program today, you can always go to WBEN.com, download the Odyssey app, and you can listen to us pretty much anywhere. And I guarantee you will not find a better political analyst on the radio than David Bellavia. It's what he lives to do, and it shows every time he does it.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.